From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Ingrid Croce is my guest. She is a performer and a songwriter and a restaurateur, and has written a couple of books. Her latest and most highly anticipated is I Got a Name, The Jim Croce Story, a biography of her late husband, Jim Croce, and written with her current husband, Jimmy Rock. Ingrid Croce, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be talking to you.
I love the book, and it's a very loving tribute to the singer-songwriter Jim Croce, who was killed in a plane crash in 1973, right at the moment that his fame was about to blossom. But your book goes even deeper than that, and it also reveals, I guess, some less attractive aspects of Jim Croce's nature and of your relationship with him. Were you reluctant to expose those less attractive aspects? Was that why you waited almost 40 years to publish this memoir?
You know, the story wasn't easy to decipher, and that's the really interesting part. First of all, I wasn't trying to hang up any dirty laundry. There was none of that kind of thing. I didn't want to write about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I wanted to understand what the relationship was about. And it really took, a loving husband and a lot of time to put my story together. So, that was the reason it took so long. I wanted to make sure that it was right for Jim's fans and certainly for our family. And we've done the very best job we could, and we feel really happy with what we've been able to write.
Well, it's a very complete picture, and I mean, it feels very complete. I mean, and that is, it's not, yes, there are things that are, as I mentioned, you know, maybe less attractive, but it's not, but it wouldn't be a true picture of somebody, anybody, if it was just all wonderful and great.
Yeah, I'm sure there's things about me that people will read that maybe I wouldn't be as proud of either. But, you know, I think you've got to be honest. And if you're going to do a biography, you better do it with, you know, playing fair. And I felt like I opened myself up to doing, you know, to doing just that. And I think it shares a love story that is really deep. And it started, you know, when we were so very young. And I also think that what I was trying to do, or we were trying to do, was to make sure that we got a chance to talk about the times and how different things were back then. Well, maybe not all that different, but quite different in some ways, you know. The world has changed a lot since in the last 40 years, and I wanted to make sure that young people who loved Jim Croce understood that, you know, times have always been tough. It's never been easy. And it's not easy to make it in the music business, but it's not easy to make it, period, unless you really put a lot of hard work into it. Well,
yeah.
Jim always said, you know, I hate working, and yet he was probably one of the hardest workers I've ever met, because to him, playing music was never work, you know?
Well, he worked very hard. I mean, that's one of the wonderful things about the story, is that he was not an overnight success. In fact, he doesn't become a success until, you know, almost the end of your book. But
exactly.
He had so many other things that he did. Talk a little bit about his time as a teacher. I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Well, he was, I have to think back a second here. When I, Jim and I got married in 1966, and right after we got married, I was just 19. My dad passed away, and he was in boot camp at the time. And so he needed to come home on a hardship leave and helped out with my family and my little sister and brother. And so we got a chance to be together then after my dad had passed away, but, you know, under difficult circumstances. And he had promised my father that he would get me through school because, you know, he had graduated from college, and my dad was it was very important to him, and he thought to me that I go to college. So Jim promised he'd help me to get through school, which he did, and he had to get work. So he got a job, boy, doing lots of different things. One of them was that teaching special education at Polanski Junior High School, which was out in Chester, Pennsylvania, and a little bit of a rough area. And special ed, of course, is never easy. I think they had eight or nine teachers before Jim came in. And he really enjoyed teaching the kids how to learn to read. I mean, we're talking about, you know, people in junior high, because they weren't reading, you know. but teaching them how to read through using his music. He would get songs that the kids were into, and he would perform those songs for them and then have them read the lead sheets to it. And they'd be singing. Before you knew it, they'd be learning. And unfortunately, the school didn't take to Jim's learning style. They didn't think that was a parochial way to teach. And so they, you know, the next year they said, look, you know, we want you back, but you can't teach the kids to read the same way that you did before. And, you know, he really was at a loss because the kids had finally learned how to read. And, you know, they were learning history and they were learning all kinds of things through music. And eventually, you know, of course, he had to give it up because he wasn't able to teach the kids without using either music or in some way the arts to help them.
Well, obviously, that is the administration at that school were idiots. It's clear.
Well, you know, education's come up, again in some ways. There, it was far more certainly far more parochial back than it is now, and you know, people. I think, you know, I look at what my grandson is doing, and, you know, of course, we didn't have computers. We didn't have many of the things that the kids have today. But at the same time, we had a lot more sports and a lot more arts and music than they have in the schools today, you know.
No kidding. You guys actually did a kids show or something?
Well, we tried to get a kids show, but Hoagy Carmichael won it right out from under us.
Hoagy Carmichael.
Hoagy Carmichael. I haven't heard that name in a long time. But we were trying to get a children's show for Boston, and we were really excited about it because we hadn't had work in a long time. We'd been on the road about a year and a half. We came back from the road because we realized we couldn't make a living playing music on the road. We made $300 a week, which basically covered our gas and our hotels or whatever we needed. And then we were making $200 a week that covered our rent and to be able to, you know, make sure we paid our insurance and the things that all people need to pay. And by the time we were out on the road, we were on the road probably over a year and a year and a half maybe, and we realized we weren't able to pay our bills. We had to come back. So we were very excited about this opportunity to get a children's show. And both of us had some skill in being able to teach children. So we thought with music, this would be the ideal way to do it. And so we wrote about 30 songs for the show. And they were all about history and, you know, really fun songs. And we did this in about 2-3 weeks, put it on went into the studio and recorded them, and then found out, sadly, that we hadn't won the show, but we had some really nice songs. We then later, shortly after that, moved from New York to Lyndale, Pennsylvania, and I got pregnant with our son. And then Jim wrote Time in a Bottle and You Don't Mess Around with Jim and his first album. So there were a lot of great things that came out of that move. I don't look back on my life with regret.
Well, that's good.
You know, I really feel that that I've been very, very fortunate, and I'm thrilled that Jim got those 2 years out in the public to be able to get his music out there, and that it was so prolific and that he was, you know, so well-loved that the music's still here today.
Absolutely. We're talking with Ingrid Croce, and she's just written a biography of her late husband, Jim Croce, called I Gotta Name the Jim Croce Story. You were an artist. You are an artist, and you went to RISD, the Rhode Island School of Design?
Yes, I did. And I'm just, after 40 years, I am finally back to doing my art again. I still have Croce's Restaurant and Jazz Bar, which is, you know, a full-time business, really, and I do all the hiring, and I do all the PR marketing, and I do a lot of, and I'm at the restaurant almost every day. But I have found a way to actually get back to doing my artwork, and I am loving it. I'm really loving doing it. So I'm really thrilled about that. It's taken a long time to get here, but
well,
I'm back.
That's really great. you know, in the long-standing tradition of rock and roll performers, you guys got screwed over when you signed your early contracts. What went into reclaiming the rights of Jim Croce's music?
Well, you know, when we first signed to the people we signed with, out of, you know, we thought that it was a friendship, and we thought that we were signing for a year. And as it turned out, we were signed in perpetuity, and we would never be out of our contracts. I'm still not out of my contract. So it was, you know, those kind of contracts were not unusual for blues singers of the time, you know, if they were lucky enough to get a contract, you know. So back then, you know, you have to remember it was a very different time in the music business. And people signed bad contracts a lot. We weren't the only ones. But I think what happened was a lot of those people still lived, and, you know, they were able to renegotiate, and if they were really good, they were able to start their own record company or have somebody buy them out of a contract. In Jim's case, we didn't have any money, and there was no way that we had any legal fees, so we couldn't really do much. You know, when Jim realized that Adrian James was going to be born, AJ was going to be born, he really wanted to make music his life. And he went back into the studio with the same people who we had the contracts with. We kind of left the city for a while because we really felt like we just couldn't do the contract situation any longer. And you know, since we weren't making enough to live on, we had to go out, and Jim drove a truck, and I sold my art, and we lived in the country because that's what we could afford. But then when he found out we were having a child, he thought, gosh, this is my very last chance to make it. And he went back and wrote Time in a Bottle, like I said, and most of the songs in the first album. And, you know, that's history now, because, you know, our what really did change things around is in 1998, after all those years, federal copyright law changed, and the inheritors of Jim's estate were able to get Jim's domestic publishing back here in the United States. But and that was a wonderful thing. I mean, I fought for many years to get our rights, which did change artists' rights, but didn't necessarily help me. And then in the end, we got to get our publishing back. So it all worked out after the fact. But the saddest part for me was that Jim never got to recognize his value. And I think that is the saddest part for me, is that he never got to recognize, you know, he knew that people liked his music, but if you don't get paid for what you do, there's a certain sense of failure, you know. And because success does mean that you can afford to pay for the things you want to give your family and you want to be able to purchase. And that wasn't something that ever happened for Jim Croce.
Now, there's a part in your book that I want to ask you about. A psychic told you some pretty interesting things at one time in your life when you were pregnant with your son.
Yes, it was a friend of ours, Sal Joseph. Or Joe Salviola was his real name, but he liked to be called Sal Joseph when he was writing. But he had a friend named Danny who was he was into horoscopes and all kinds of things. And he came to the house one day and he said, "I'm going to, you know, give you a present for you, for your newborn son. Before he's born, I want to tell you three things." He said, "Well, first of all, it's going to be a boy. Second of all, he's going to have a birthmark." And then he said quite solemnly, "And by the time he's 2 years old, he'll have only one parent." And, you know, Jim and I were both quite startled by that, and we thought, well, maybe he meant because Jim was going to be on the road, or, you know, we weren't really clear about what that was about. And strangely enough, that was a prediction that came true. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that all soothsayers are accurate, but boy, he certainly was.
Do you think it was just a strange coincidence, or do you think there is something to psychic predictions?
You know, I'll tell you another story, and I know you've probably read it in the book. 6 months after Jim's father died, a young woman came up to him and said that she had seen his father, and that, and Jim said, oh, really? He said, well, you know, what did he look like? And, oh, he was a nice-looking man. He was tall and had, you know, salt and pepper gray hair, about 6 foot tall, and he had a, you know, a flannel shirt on. And Jim said, yeah, uh-huh. I can just see Jim's famous, uh-huh. And she said, well, you know, he always said that you don't mess around with Jim was going to make it. And it was so startling to Jim. He picked up the phone. He said, well, thank you for letting me know. And he went back to the dressing room and called me immediately. He said, you're not going to believe this. I was just speaking to a fan, and he told me the story. And it was so interesting because I don't know how those things happen. I can't say how those things happen, but I believe that they do. And, you know, I can't tell you why, but I have a belief that that can happen. And I think that, you know, I don't think there's a lot of things out there we can't explain in life. That may be one of them.
We're talking with Ingrid Croce, and she's just written this wonderful book about her late husband, Jim Croce. It's called I Got a Name, The Jim Croce Story, and you wrote it along with your current husband, Jimmy Rock. How was that, writing a book about one husband with another husband helping?
You know, I must say that it was a gift to me to have my husband, Jimmy Rock, write this book with me because, you know, it takes a big person to be able to do that, number one. And number two, he's very bright. He was an attorney at one time, and I think the thing that really encouraged him was I told him, look, I think you may need to leave your law practice if you're going to help me write this book. And he volunteered. He said, I'll do it. So he couldn't wait to leave the law practice. And so he had heard people, you know, trying to help me to either write a book or to do a script. And they, no matter how I would tell people about this, their response was always coming back with really something that it wasn't really what the story was about. And he felt he knew the story. He felt he understood it. And even so, it took us putting the book away after we decided to put the book away. The publisher wanted us to throw in more sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and we said, no, that's not what the book's about. And we put the book away. We started it 25 years ago, worked on it 4 years, and put it away and took it out about a year ago and said, you know what, we're ready. I think we know the story now. And we read it, and we almost had it, but it wasn't quite right. We needed to come from my voice. Jim and I had written it kind of, he had come from a more omnipotent point of view, and we realized that to make this really right, it had to be personal. So I rewrote my parts, and I think it works now. I think I feel good about the storyline, and I think the arc of the story is there. You know the ending. So it's really, you know, you're already, people have told me, I'm already sad before I get to the ending. I said, but it's a good ending in the sense that Jim does find redemption. His music continues to flow, and, you know, people love hearing it still. So, I don't know, to me, that's one of the greatest gifts that you can have.
Well, in your descriptions of Jim Croce's performances and in the reviews, the contemporary reviews that you publish in the book, everyone talks about how funny he was, and that doesn't necessarily come across on his three albums. Some of the songs themselves are funny, but you know that when he opened for George Carlin, a reviewer said that he was funnier than Carlin.
Right, and same thing with Woody Allen. I mean, Jim was absolutely a hysterical person. He was absolutely, I mean, you couldn't, you'd hold your sides, you'd laugh so hard, and he had great patter. He had great, you know, great things to say in between each one of the songs. He would tell stories about his life and about people in his life that he had met along the road. And in fact, the very first project that AJ and I did when we got our publishing back was to do a DVD called Have You Heard Jim Croce Live? And if you haven't seen it, you have to see it because you get to really see what Jim Croce was about. It's wonderful. He was great. He was absolutely amazing. And I think anyone who saw Jim in person, I've never had anyone come up to me and tell me that they didn't have a fabulous time. Never. People may not have liked, you know, a lot of things about Jim. I have no idea if they didn't or did, but I do know one thing, that once people saw him perform, their hearts were melted. I mean, he was just an absolutely amazing entertainer. And like you say, it wasn't just his music. It was his whole persona. He was charismatic. He was really breathtaking. He was just amazing.
Well, in those 2 years that he had as a star, were a lot of his concerts recorded, or not very many, or what?
There wasn't a lot of material. The majority came from television shows, and that's where I got most of it. There was one film that was done by Rick Trow Productions, which was for college concerts, the kind of concerts that Jim and I used to do when we were on the road. And they had asked to come out to the farm and to do a shoot of Jim and his family. They wanted to, you know, get Jim as a folk singer, what was it really like, you know? And they came out to the farm to film. And that piece is also, actually parts of that piece is on our DVD. But, you know, I really can't say if, you know, if people can, you know, what the real Jim Croce was about. I think that, you know, I'd have to say that he was a person that all of us would like to call a friend.
Interesting. I want to ask you a little bit about yourself, because your book is, in addition to being a biography of Jim Croce, it's also an autobiography of Ingrid Croce. So,
part of my life, for sure.
Yeah, so what happened to you? What happened to you next?
Well,
do we know that you...
Oh, gosh, so many things happened to me, but and some of them were really good, and most of them were good, and some of them were really bad. You know, as Arlo Guthrie put in the foreword of the book, he wrote a beautiful foreword, and he said that, you know, who would have known when we met at just such a young age that, you know, that women would be telling our life story through their eyes. And that's kind of what I think happened in our story, in telling our story, you know. Jim, when I met Jim, he was almost 20, and I was just turning 16. I was just 16, and I think I was pretty mature when I was 16, and I look back on it now, and I think both of us, you know, really, we had a relationship that was of the times. You know, people went out with college guys, and that wasn't unusual back then, and I don't know that it's unusual now, but the world was a lot different in the sense of women's rights. And in fact, the night that Jim died was the night that Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs played the tennis match of the sexes. And things were, you know, the birth control pill had just come out, and people were kind of prudish, much more prudish, at least outwardly prudish. And, you know, Jim's family, coming from a very sheltered background, had a lot of feelings about, you know, what they wanted for their son. And my family, on the other hand, was a different kind of family. They wanted me to decide, what did I want to do with my life, and how did I want to grow up? So I grew up really fast. My mom and dad were divorced when I was little, and then after my mom died at 15, when I was 15, I went to live with my dad, and then after Jim and I got married, he went away, and I was in school, and then all of a sudden I won a fellowship, and after he came back, he went to work and put me through school, and then all of a sudden I won this fellowship, and I'm going to Mexico, and I got the fellowship for my best friend and for Jim, and the reason I chose Mexico was so that it wouldn't be too expensive and we could all go together. And as it turned out, the school that I was going to in San Miguel de Allende only had a program for my classes at a certain time, and Jim was still at Pulaski Junior High School. So I went down with my friend, and sadly, while I was there, I was raped. And once Jim came to Mexico, I was afraid to tell him, because back then people were it was always the woman's fault. It didn't matter if it was, you know, if you were raped, it must have been something that you did. It was your fault. And I was petrified of telling Jim this. I was a virgin when I met him. I was scared that he wouldn't, you know, want me anymore. I really didn't know what to think. I was very, very frightened. And as it turned out, Jim's immediate reaction was really angry. And I know that it stayed with him for a very, very long time.
Were you surprised at his reaction?
Yes, I was surprised at his reaction, but at the same time, because I loved him so much, I thought maybe it was my fault. I thought maybe I had done something that had caused me to somehow bring that on. You know, I think that when you don't have the kind of counseling that you really need with rape crisis or with, you know, even domestic violence of any sort, you usually end up one of two ways. Either you end up thinking that, you know, there's an anger because someone attacked you and you just trust people the rest of your life, or you think it's your fault and you take the blame. And I think in my case, I took the blame. And it was easy for Jim to convince me that it was my fault. And I don't think he meant to do it. I don't think it was something that was, you know, premeditated. I just think that coming from somewhat of a chauvinistic history, that's the way it worked. And it was really, really hard. And it was hard for both of us. I don't mean just for me. Jim's rage and anger at that event never stopped. And it caused both of us enormous amount of pain and suffering. And I think in the end, he figured it out. And so did I, you know. But it honestly, I mean, in all honesty, it took me writing this book to really figure it out. And, you know, I have to say that if anybody is in a situation like that, it's really important to get counseling. If you can do that, you know, I know it's available now, and I'd suggest not just for, you know, the woman, but the man as well. There's a terrible amount of anger and sometimes guilt that come along with that. So, you know, when you listen to Jim's songs, you may hear them a little differently when you think about that and how all of that came about. I think they will ring with a lot more. I mean, they'll have a lot more resonance, you know, when you realize what some of them are really about.
If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again I would spend them with you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I've looked around enough to know you're the one I want to go through time with.
And the book is called I Got a Name, The Jim Croce Story. Ingrid Croce, thank you so much for sharing your story in the book and for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I do appreciate it, and I hope you'll join us at Croce's.com and take a look at all the things we have to offer there of Jim Croce.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page. It's www.fromthebookshelf.com. And you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. Find us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Ingrid Croce. Her book is called I Got a Name, The Jim Croce Story. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.